When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. It's John Pollock, it's Waiting, and it's time to chat about Monday's edition of Raw and plenty other. What is going on, Way?
Not a whole lot, man. Do you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I had a good weekend. It was nice.
Enjoying the weather?
The weather was good. Which day did it rain? It rained all day on one of them, didn't it? Didn't it rain on Saturday?
I don't remember, actually.
Rained on Saturday or something.
Maybe on Sunday. I think on Sunday.
Sunday it rained. Sunday. That's right, yes.
Well, that could still be enjoyable.
It is. I think rain is very underrated. I think it's a nice mood setter. I like rain.
All right. Cool. That's I don't know if I have that such a strong opinion on it. I mean, I don't mind it.
I don't like going out when it's raining, but if I'm inside, rain's fine. I don't care.
It's kind of nice, yeah. Well, who cares what it is, what it's like outside when you're inside?
Well, if it's really like it's really nice out and you have to be inside, it can be kind of like the world's having a party and you're indoors.
Mm, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
On that note, it's going to be a very sunny day in Toronto on Saturday, July the 6th, when we present the Cash-In. This is our next live show, and this is going to feature a live show with Braden Harrington and Davey Portman. They're going to be doing some wrestling-themed games. They're going to be handing out some incredible prizes, some of which I don't know where they are able to procure some of these limited edition prizes, but they are going to be up for grabs. Plus, Way and I will be doing a roughly 60-minute live Ask Away show on stage at Yuck Yuck's, 224 Richmond Street West. And of course, whenever it's a post-wrestling / Poison Rana get-together, that means the whole crew shows up. So if you want to hang out with all of your favorite friends at Poison Rana and post-wrestling, Saturday, July 6th, postwrestling.com/live. Get your tickets now, just hours before Money in the Bank, when Lyra Valkyria and Jey Uso are going to be battling for those briefcases. You'll be seeing the real Cash-In several hours earlier.
Mm, yes. Yeah. We don't have a ton of opportunities to really interact with listeners throughout the year. And this is kind of really one of them, especially locally. So hopefully a lot of you guys show up.
Never know who's going to show up. So tune in, check it out. And that will be always fun when we get to do these live in person. And you get to hang out with us all day long.
Whether it's rainy or if it's beautiful outside.
Rain or shine. We are coming at you with the Cash-In. As we will this week with a really loaded schedule up on the site. The whole schedule can be found at postwrestling.com. But a few highlights I want to mention is that throughout the month of June, we are returning with the double shot. We're going to be coming back, a limited engagement, as they would say, for the Who Killed WCW series. And that is going to be kicking off this Wednesday night immediately after Rewind Dynamite. We will be doing it on Wednesday this week. And then the other three episodes, tune in Wednesday for our rollout schedule. But this Wednesday, episode one will be covered immediately after the Dynamite review on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So you do have to be a member to catch this show. And we could not launch any show with the letters WCW in it without welcoming back a man we haven't spoken to in quite some time. Brian Mann will be on with us Wednesday night to chat about episode one of the new Vice TV series.
Boot up the satellite of hate. The return also, of Brian Mann.
Yes. So Brian is he is ready, and the satellite is going to be in orbit on Wednesday night. Plus, I'm going to be interviewing Evan Husney on Tuesday. So look out for that interview. That'll be free for everybody. Going over the series and collaborating with $7 Productions. Of course, when this idea came together, this was just before the announcement that Dwayne Johnson was joining the WWE's board of directors. So we'll talk about that, and we'll get his thoughts on maybe some other non-Dark Side and WCW-related documentaries in the wrestling space and what the future of Dark Side of the Ring is as well. So chatting with Evan on Tuesday, and it's a really big week with other shows. Thursday, we won't go too deep into the schedule here, but this edition of Rewind Away, we are going back And this is a very, if you were watching New Japan in 2013, this show will, I'm sure, bring back memories for some. August the 4th, 2013, Osaka, Japan, not at the Edeon Arena. No, folks, the Bodymaker Coliseum, still the greatest named venue in the history of professional wrestling. And this features, back when the G1 was a 10-day event, featuring 10 matches, one card in front of an electric audience from start to finish. And that is what we are going to be chatting. Some of the highlights of this one show of the G1: Shinsuke Nakamura and Kota Ibushi, their first singles meeting. Hiroshi Tanahashi and not Finn, but Prince Devitt. Katsuyori Shibata versus Tomohiro Ishii. And kicking things off, Yujiro Takahashi versus Toru Yano. So this is going to be, this is a show that I remember very fondly from the time period.
It was chosen by our executive producer, Bruce Lord, specifically because he's heard you speak about it multiple times.
So. I did my review of this show like an hour after I watched this in 2013. And at the time I called this, I said, I feel this is one of the greatest, if not the greatest shows I've ever watched in my history of watching pro wrestling. So does it hold up 11 years later? Find out. And this was a selection by Bruce Lord. So all of that is coming up. It is a brand new month. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you onto the cafe and gets you all your bonus shows, including the double shot all month, including multiple rewind-aways with the G1 show and the return of the popular musical review, as Nate, Chris from LA, and Wei Ting will sit down and they're going to spin some vinyl. WrestleMania the album.
That's correct. Yeah. Slam Jam. The Linda McMahon theme, which we all love so much. Bret Hart's debut as an artist. What a career he could have had, you know, as a secondary career. I'm looking forward to talking to Nate and Chris very much for that. So you get all those shows plus MCU later for the month of June and the lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine. And also you get these shows that John and I do on the free feed. You get them ad free.
That's right. You get them all without Wei's wonderful ads, his wonderful voice, which I personally enjoy. I always listen to the ad version, but it's not for everybody. but you can check that out as well. MCU later, as Wei mentioned, they're going through the whole chronicles of the X-Men Wolverine journey. And I am happy to say that I have an hour left in X2 as I'm trying. I'm
you're
trying
really,
to keep up with them. I'm
trying. Really joining along. Hey,
I'm trying. Wow. I'm trying.
There's so much you missed, like as part of the MCU. But going back to watch the X-Men movies, you're on board, huh?
Well, I had only seen I've seen X-Men, and then I saw Days of Future Past, and I don't think I've seen any others. I have not seen X2.
Wow.
And okay. So these are all first time viewings for me.
Well, what do you think of it so far?
Well, I don't know. I'm not done yet, so I can't speak with an hour left to go. This might. I don't know how these final 60 minutes will go. But anyway, that's all up at postwrestlingcafe.com. And we will now move on over to the news. And we're going to start off with Missy Hyatt. She did a pair of interviews recently on the Wrestling Shoot Interviews YouTube channel and with Café de René with René Dupri. And in both interviews, she spoke about her time. This was a very brief tenure she had at the World Wrestling Federation in early 1987. And if you remember at this time, this was when Roddy Piper was wrapping up at WrestleMania 3. He was going to be dedicating his career to acting at that time and was going to be doing the send-off with Adrian Adonis. So there was this gap for a new interview segment. And she got the call from Vince McMahon, and she at the time was engaged to Eddie Gilbert. And they both flew to New York to meet with Vince McMahon. And quickly, Eddie Gilbert realized that he wasn't going to have much of a spot here. This was more for Missy. And they were going to try her out with her own interview segment called Missy's Manor. Now, these never made it to television, but you can see them online. They were taped and you can see the segments. And Missy Hyatt has always talked about like these were terrible. Like she was not a very good babyface in this role. They were just segments that did not work, but they tried them at three of the tapings. They did two in March, and then another about a month later in April, and then they kind of pulled the plug on them. Well, in this story, in recounting it, she mentions the fact that while in Las Vegas, which would have been the site of the very first taping that she was part of, doing one of these segments, she stated that she went out with this large group, including Vince McMahon, for dinner. And there were others there, like Dick Ebersol and Gene Okerlund. And she said that she had to push Vince McMahon out of her hotel room because he was trying to put his tongue down my throat. And stated that afterward, she was offered a role after that where she was going to be a featherette, which, if you remember at that time, these were almost like the, not quite ring card girls, but the closest equivalent in the WWF, where these were these women in their uniforms and they just take the guys' props and ring jackets to the back. And she wasn't really into that idea of a lesser role and ultimately didn't go there. But of note is that she stated that when the Janelle Grant lawsuit came out, she did reach out to Grant's legal team and said that she would be willing to be a witness if just to back up like her own personal allegation against Vince McMahon and the fact that he, tried to come on to her. So she stated she was not surprised by any of these allegations, but she had never spoken about this before. She has spoken about the circumstances of like Missy's Manor and this dinner she was taken out to, but never the allegation against Vince. So it's another allegation. And in terms of the timeline, this would only have been about 8 months after the alleged rape that Rita Chatterton alleged in the prior July, which she has, at least her case, she has settled with Vince McMahon and will very likely never be speaking about that. But it's another story, and I think everyone takes all of these allegations seriously and are believable to people as they continue to add up. And it seems as ones that are completely believable stories when you hear them coming out.
It just makes me continue to think about what stories might be out there where people aren't speaking up that have occurred throughout history. And at this point, you have to be open to believing anything.
You have to. And I think that there's, how many people in private are speaking up that don't want any kind of spotlight. And like Missy has never spoken about this prior as well. But it's, when you read a case like Janelle Grant's and, as she mentioned, like she was not surprised by any of this. We move on over to the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, and it has now come down to Taiji Ishimori and El Desperado after today's semifinal matches at Corcoran Hall. Taiji Ishimori and TJP had an awesome match. They went almost 20 minutes, and they had all these counters and reversals near the end, ending with TJP going for his own version of the bone lock to apply, but Ishimori reversed it, turned it into a reverse Bloody Sunday that he hit, and then hit the Bloody Cross to pin TJP. So the story here is that last year, Taiji Ishimori had suffered this major neck injury and had to withdraw from the Best of the Super Juniors mid-tournament. So this year he's coming back and he is going to the finals, and he'll take on El Desperado, who beat Doki. These two had another very good match. I would recommend both, but Desperado won after a pair of pinche locos in 22 minutes and 28 seconds, and Desperado, Ishimori, neither has won the Best of the Super Juniors before, and the idea that Taiji Ishimori would headline one of the biggest cards of the year for New Japan in Osaka would not have been my prediction at the beginning of the year. But here we are, and it'll be Desperado and Taiji Ishimori on Sunday headlining above Evil and Jon Moxley, who are having a lumberjack match, and a Storm Rules match of sorts for the KOPW Championship. This is going to be Yuya Uemura and Great Okan, the two options for the fans. Great Okan suggested a 2 out of 3 falls match with a 61-minute time limit. Fans were like, no, we're not going to vote for that. So instead, it's a 15-minute match, and you get 2 rope breaks. And if you leave the ring, you lose.
Okay.
Sure. All right. 15 minutes, see. I'll take it. So that is among the highlights coming up at Dominion this coming Sunday. another departure that was reported over the weekend. Fightful first reported this, and then there's been subsequent reporting. But Lou DeAngeli, who was the vice president of marketing at Anthem, he is gone. The Observer adding that an assistant to him as well in this department, also gone. Lou DeAngeli, who you will remember was Sign Guy Dudley all the way back in ECW, but has had a big career in marketing. He worked in a capacity as a director for WWE for multiple years in the 2000s, and then went to work at Cirque du Soleil for over 11 years, and has been with TNA for several years now, working at Anthem in this VP role. And I would say whether we're looking at David Sahadi, Lou DeAngeli, question is going to become, way are there going to, who are going to be picking up these roles? Are there going to be people hired to replace them? And if this is just sheer cost cutting, well, then that just, it puts a lot onto other people who it's like your existing work and now you're going to take over someone else's role. But like your marketing and live events departments, and when we're talking, and like creative director, like these are not insignificant roles that you are removing. And I mean, the work has to be done by other people. Like, you are still a live events business. That is part of your core business.
Sure. Yeah. Venues have to be booked. You know, tickets have to be organized to be sold. And do these positions currently exist within Anthem and other avenues that are already existing? Or is it just them opening up a position that they can, you know, perhaps move somebody up or hire from outside to fulfill? Don't know right now.
SmackDown on Friday night, they did 2,310,000 viewers and a 0.65. So their largest demo number since April the 12th. And they were up 16% in the demo this week and up 8%. This was compared to the tape show in Saudi Arabia last week. Adults 18 to 34 was up 23%, and they did top the Edmonton Oilers Dallas Stars game by a good amount. They beat them by a 0.65 to a 0.52, and they were also ahead of the College Softball World Series, which is all the rage on ESPN on a Friday evening. Rampage, which aired at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, did 255,000 viewers and a 0.09. So this we can compare, because the prior week the show aired at 6 Eastern and they were up 15% in viewers, 16% in the demo this week for Rampage. And then the final things for NXT on Tuesday night, the big match is Jordynne Grace against Stevie Turner, Thea Hale taking on Jasmine Nix, Izzy Dame against Carmen Petrovic, and the Heritage Cup will be defended by Tony D'Angelo against Damon Kemp, the last remaining link to the Stevenson family in WWE.
We'll see how he does.
And Dynamite, Wednesday night, they're in Loveland, Colorado, with Swerve Strickland against Roderick Strong for the AEW title, Saraya against Mariah May, which was put off for a week, and the return of MJF. Do you think they're going to put him in this match with Roosh immediately, or do you think they'll hold that one off for a week or two?
I'm assuming maybe holding off. Otherwise, I feel like they might have announced it already. You know, they announced MJF will be appearing, not necessarily wrestling. So I can see that being a delay. Yeah.
And one other thing I just wanted to bring up was the UFC 303 press conference. So they were supposed to hold a press conference in Dublin, Ireland today. And this was to promote the Conor McGregor Michael Chandler fight, and there was so much demand for a press conference that they didn't charge for tickets, but they did make it a ticketed event because of the demand, and they were expecting 10,000 people to show up today for this press conference, and around 12 hours before the press conference is to start, the UFC announces that it has been postponed out of nowhere. And of course, this is going to bring up all of this speculation. Ariel Helwani did report that whatever the reasoning is, and I assume he's been told what it is, but it's off the record, that it's nothing salacious. It doesn't have anything to do with a drug test violation or anything criminal, but the press conference is off. And I guess McGregor was supposed to do other media and it was all off. And this is 4 weeks before the fight. And I would imagine, as much as they say postponed, I can't imagine them rebooking this in 4 weeks' time. And that if I was Michael Chandler, I was like, you can bring the press conference to me over here in Florida. I'm not getting on a plane and going to Ireland where it might or might not happen. But man, I can't imagine, like, again, this was about 12 hours or so notice. the fans that were probably showing up for this, media that was flying over to cover this. I mean, what a just disaster that this was. And rightfully so, the people are going to be skeptical. Like, is this fight 100% going to happen? And this is going to be the largest gate in UFC history for this fight on June 29th. And is one that, like, if there was anything that affected this fight, like, there is no replacement if a Conor McGregor were not to fight. But maybe this is just a blip, but it was, you know, the UFC, they're very good with this type of stuff. So this had to be a really kind of, like, they are a very well-run machine when it comes to their promotions and staging these press conferences. But if Conor McGregor isn't coming to the press conference, he's not coming to the press conference.
Developing story.
Very, very accurate.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Okay, all of your news can be found over at postwrestling.com. Tonight we go to the Giant Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. WrestleTix reporting over 9,100 tickets distributed. And boy, it seems that we have entered in a new era of WWE. I counted like 8 new nicknames we've got for some of these wrestlers. We have the Badass Bron Breakker. We have the Big SOB Bron Breakker, or Braun Strowman, I'm sorry, but multiple Brons now on the show. It just, we had all these different nicknames that I was picking up on here that Michael Cole was dropping.
It didn't necessarily jump out to me out of the ordinary. Maybe it's just something I just kind of considered WWE speak that usually comes out of Michael Cole. Like, are they branding?
Braun Strowman, they definitely are, because he's got the shirt now, the Big SOB. And Bron Breakker, he was introduced when he arrived at the arena as the Unpredictable Badass. And then his singlet, it just read Badass on it, not Unpredictable. I'd go with the Unpredictable. No one wants a predictable Badass. Sure. Also, Pat McAfee was labeled the always controversial Pat McAfee, because he had quite the day on his show on ESPN, where he was describing Caitlin Clark, and I guess in trying to speak about her, his defense is that he was trying to praise this woman, but in doing so, referred to her as this white bitch, and this was meant as a term of endearment, but it upset a lot of people. He had to issue an apology over this, and did not stop Pat McAfee from still calling a Braun Strowman this big white son of a bitch as a kind of nod to this. This is a very big controversy in sports media today with Pat McAfee, and Cole made a couple references to it, having Pat McAfee, the always controversial Pat McAfee, and having a big day of journalism, which I wouldn't exactly assign Pat McAfee's job as journalist, but that that is the standard he has set. So we start off the show with Liv Morgan, who first they recapped the closing angle from last week and the kiss that all of America missed. But as Liv informed us, over 40 million views for this video that people have watched since then. So I guess everyone's caught up now. She says she takes credit for getting rid of Rhea Ripley and sending Becky into early retirement, but the cherry on top was kissing Dominic. And Dom comes out, and the crowd is all over him and warns her that Rhea is going to kill you when she returns. Liv says she'll probably kill you too, Dominic, and says that, Dominic, you came to the ring last week just to be closer to me. and I want to take everything from Rhea, including you. And she starts coming on to him in the corner when Finn Balor runs out and tells Liv to back off, and none of them want anything to do with her. And this would be played out throughout the night involving Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio. So they are playing with the story that Dominic is resisting Liv, but I think everyone knows where this is headed.
Sure, yeah. I thought this was great. You know, I think Liv does a pretty decent job of playing the seductress here. And I mean, it's a role that is kind of interestingly feels kind of fresh in 2024. And that's interesting because there were like, it wasn't that long ago where like this felt like it was the only role for women in the WWE and maybe even wrestling at large for quite a while. Like I would go as far as to say it's a pretty like stereotypical sort of tropey role for women in wrestling traditionally. But because I think we've been away from that sort of thing, at least like, you know, as a main gimmick for quite a while, at least with a champion, it kind of feels fresh. It kind of feels like, you know, I'm ready to see something like this again. And I think, you know, Liv, this is a role that requires a lot of confidence for it. And I think Liv is building up to it. Maybe not completely there yet, but like she certainly like did really well, I would say, overall in this show.
I thought she was very good on this show tonight.
I think it's a money character, and you know, I like how it involves all of the Judgment Day. Most interesting to me in all of this is how Balor and JD are truly operating within all of this, because we've seen both of them. We've seen every member. Well, we've seen Dom, we've seen JD, we've seen Balor interact with Liv in those sort of Easter egg shots in the background. So when Finn Balor is stepping in the way of Dominic and trying to, you know, get Liv Morgan out of here, like what are his true motivations? I think all of this is they're almost operating in like almost a bit of a sort of like a layered type of like, you know, interaction where like what we're supposed to see on screen is kind of their way of manipulating specifically maybe Rhea Ripley, and then maybe even beyond that Damian Priest. But what we're only seeing in the background is perhaps how they truly are acting. So it's intriguing.
Jackie Redmond spoke with Sheamus, who called Ludwig Kaiser a Ken doll, but maybe Gunther has been holding him back, and we'll see if he can go toe-to-toe with him tonight. And the only way to gain his respect is by putting on banger after banger. So Sheamus walks through Gorilla into the arena, and he gets jumped from behind by Kaiser, who takes out his knee, and that would be the focus of the match. Kaiser attacks the knee, and Sheamus's chest is all red after just minutes of chops. Sheamus gets rammed into the post, and then Kaiser goes for his own version of the 10 beats, but is stopped when his neck gets snapped, and Sheamus is trying to get to his feet. He's just seated in the corner. The audience is chanting for him, and the referee is checking to see if he's going to end it, but Sheamus will not allow the referee to stop the match, and waves on Kaiser and yells, "Come on, you bitch!" And Sheamus takes these chops, comes back with his own, and lands a knee strike, but then his knee buckles on the brogue kick attempt. There's a roll-up by Kaiser. Sheamus hits the 10 beats and goes for the white noise on the turnbuckle, but Kaiser slips out, kicks the knee, and pins Sheamus, who's got the bad injured knee, in 13 minutes and 43 seconds. So Ludwig Kaiser gets the win. And worth noting, there was no Gunther on the show.
No. What's he got coming up?
Well, nothing at Clash. He won the King of the Ring, but he's not set up for anything at Clash at the Castle.
Yeah, he might not be on this one.
He's waiting. He's just waiting for SummerSlam.
Like, let's remember, like, throughout that IC title run, I mean, he kind of went through a stretch where he was just the SmackDown title defense right before the pay-per-view and wouldn't necessarily do a title defense on the pay-per-view. So I don't think it hurts, like, if Gunther wasn't on this particular show. They have enough, you know, especially if you only have, like, 5 to 6 matches on the card. But tonight, I thought Ludwig Kaiser sort of embodied, you know, the in-ring spirit of Gunther here with some of these chops. I thought this was a great match between these two. I thought Sheamus' selling was tremendous in it. He really has built up, like, a great reputation for himself for sort of being, like, a flag bearer of, like, WWE's version of, like, a stiffer wrestling style that you would see outside of this promotion. And it seems like he's only dove deeper into that direction with this current run. I think what made him a lot more compelling than even usual in this match is some fantastic fantastic selling and storytelling of that knee. And it made Kaiser look very threatening in the process. You know, this was a Kaiser that was, to me, wrestling a lot more, kind of like Gunther, you know, like he's doing the level of damage that Gunther would typically do somebody like Sheamus. And it's the type of match that I think helps Kaiser step out of that, you know, sidekick sort of spotlight, in my opinion. It made him look like a killer, and I can certainly see these two having a series.
Yeah, as I couldn't help but think of Giovanni Vinci during this match, that poor guy, odd man out.
Yeah, what's he doing? Is he even...
He was moved to SmackDown in the draft, wasn't he? And we haven't seen him since.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if things look very good for him, or he might be in the middle of just waiting for a rebrand, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dominic is with Balor and JD McDonagh when Priest enters, asking if Dom has an explanation for what happened with Liv. Balor just says it's taken care of, and when asked if Dominic has reached out to Rhea, he said, "I didn't do anything. I'm just giving Rhea some space right now." And Priest hopes that he makes it right with her. And Priest wants to settle some scores tonight and prove why the Judgment Day run Raw.
Yeah.
Okay. That's our plan for the night.
Yeah. So we get information that I guess
Dom did not reach out to Rhea to explain. Maybe he just assumed the overrun would cover his ass.
He's giving her space, which I don't know if is ever a good sign about the future prospects of a relationship when things are in that phase.
I do wonder if Damian Priest is having these same conversations with Rhea, because I don't know if you follow her social media, but I think Rhea's like might be like involved with people, not Dominic.
But that's not in universe, though. That's outside of the WWE universe.
I seem to have seen that. What wasn't he at the Hall of Fame?
I think that was just a former colleague.
Oh, okay.
They just might be friends.
Okay, I just want to know how this all works, because Dominic might have a defense.
I mean, I don't know if you. I don't know if Dominic has much of a defense for his personal life either.
Yeah, it's a very complicated web. If we bring in, like, social media should absolutely be part of all of this. Ricochet is in the locker room with Ilya and notes how he almost beat him last week, and Ilya tells him to be cautious tonight against Braun because he's wired differently, and Ricochet explains we're all wired differently and he can finish this with Ilya after Braun tonight. So they're all wired differently.
Oh, you have to be in order to do this. I mean, these guys are all crazy. Are you kidding me? You know, Dragunov's just like, he's nuts. Ricochet is definitely nuts, and I'm gonna assume Braun Breaker is nuts too. These past few weeks, I think actually Ricochet has come across like pretty well. You know, this is some of the best Ricochet I've seen in these sort of backstage speaking roles. The dialogue is good. The script allows him to like show like good determination despite having this awful rib injury. And I think Dragunov like has transitioned into this sort of main roster backstage skit type of like position really well.
He does have an indoor voice, we found.
He does. Yeah. I look forward to you developing your impression of Ilya Dragunov. I think that would be a really fun
one. He's in development, let's just say
that. Yeah, but they're building this like Dragunov-Ricochet rivalry slash relationship, I think, pretty well through these scenes.
Dragon Lee against Finn Balor. I was looking forward to this, but a lot of this was during the commercial break. There was a video for Dragon Lee where we got the mix. We got the opening subtitles, but then he learned English and we just transitioned to English.
He kind of went back and forth between the two.
I guess he ended near the end, too. Tope Suicida by Dragon Lee. They look great as they go to break. And Carlito shows up, crotches Dragon Lee on the turnbuckle behind the referee's back. So Dragon Lee then thwarts Balor, hits a high cross to Carlito on the floor, and then drops JD with a boot. Balor can capitalize, though, when Lee gets back into the ring with a shotgun dropkick and coup de grace as Ferg gets the win in 8 minutes and 36 seconds. The real rock and roller.
Oh, Did he look better here or in 2013?
Well, he got a massive. Well, I don't want to ruin anything for you, but I would go with the 2013 match that we're going to talk about on Thursday. I think that one will stand a bit taller than this one.
Okay, all right. The scenes backstage without Carlito kind of made Carlito feel like a bit more of an unexpected, entry into this one. It was, effective, I think, in building this little stable feud between the LWO and Judgment Day.
The Judgment Day attack until Braun Strowman is out with his one big SOB t-shirt that he's now wearing. So we will have to hear Pat McAfee scream this every time we see him. He lays out Judgment Day, but then Dominic comes in. First Judgment Day run through the crowd. We'll get more Braun later in the night. Sami Zayn is seen walking in the back, and this was notable because Sonya Deville was in the background speaking with Natalya. There's going to be a Clash at the Castle kickoff event on Friday, June 14th at 11 a.m. Eastern time, but follow along their social media 12 hours beforehand, just in case. Don't make any concrete plans until everyone's arrived. Judgment Day and Priest are back in backstage, and they thought the Strowman situation would be solved by tonight, so Priest suggests that Carlito go ask Adam Pearce for a match and take care of Braun Strowman tonight. And then R-Truth came in and spoke to Carlito about being in Judgment Day were the best days of his life. So the Miz is there and says, no, these are the best days of your life. And they argue, and this was our reminder that these are the tag champions.
Yeah. I think both sets of tag titles right now are sort of on teams that are more comic relief characters than actual credible wrestlers. And I'm speaking of also Waller and Theory, of course, and it's fine, perhaps, if you're going to do that, to use this period of rebuilding after WrestleMania. But I think I'm ready for both of these runs to end by this point. I'm ready for like a serious tag team to take these so that we can have anticipated matchups being promoted. Right now, there doesn't even seem to be that sort of direction.
Well, I mean, if I was The Miz, I'd be like, if this is what I got to do every week, I'm more than happy to just I'll do my one backstage segment every week. I'm cool. Sami Zayn comes out and he wants to address Chad Gable. This has gone on long enough, so he asks Gable to come out alone so they can put an end to this. But instead, Maxine, Otis, and Tozawa come out, and Maxine has a prepared statement stating that Gable said that Zayn was not worth his time and we need to redeem ourselves. So she reads a message from Gable, running down Tozawa as a failure dressed as a ninja, Otis being a child who couldn't even hold on to the Money in the Bank briefcase, and Maxine, a knockoff Barbie that no one wanted, whereas without Gable, Zayn would just be a disheveled mess that Gunther would have squashed. And Gable wants another title match. And just like that, Zayn accepts. He's like, yes, I accept for Clash at the Castle. And we got our match.
Seems to be the case these days when it comes to title matches. You either show up and you ask, or you threaten the boss and you ask, and you just get them. It's that easy. Yes. Who needs tournaments or casino gauntlets?
Yes. I'm never going to complain when we get screaming Tony Khan just accepting that's a great idea and making a title match on the spot with Roderick Strong. That might have been our best title setup of the year. So we got Zayn and Gable, apparently a Clash at the Castle, just like that. And Zayn asks the three, are you three tired of this? You're better than this. Gable doesn't determine your worth. You need to set yourselves free. And Gable shows up from behind, jumping Sammy, and calls on Otis to attack him. And he's bullying Otis as Tozawa stands in. So Gable goes and gets in Tozawa's face. Maxine is begging him to stop. So Gable screams for her to get on her knees and beg, which she does, and then kicks her and Tozawa out of the ring. And in doing so, Otis stands up to Gable and gets in between. And this arena went nuts. This was one of the biggest reactions on the whole show. Mm-hmm. And they're chanting Otis. And then Zayn fights back and Gable sends Zayn into Otis from behind. And Otis accidentally knocks Maxine and Tozawa off the apron and they land on the floor. And Otis is fuming and he's looking at Gable and he's looking at Zayn. And the crowd is hoping that he's going to finally realize who hit him from behind. And instead, he grabs Sammy and hits him with a World's Strongest Slam. And the crowd is deflated. But man, this was an awesome segment, and the way they are building this, I mean, I don't know what the long-term will be with Otis, but my God, when this guy finally attacks Chad Gable, like, this crowd just went nuts when they thought they were going to get this payoff.
And he leaves by putting Tozawa on his back and carrying Maxine and carrying the both of them up like this.
This was a great visual.
Hilarious.
He threw Tozawa on his back and lifted Maxine. Yeah. Strong man.
This was great. I think they've done such a great job of making Otis this sort of silent and like tortured monster. You know, similar to, I guess, in the past, your big giants that are kind of held captive, like a Kane or a Killswitch is sort of like a modern day equivalent. Or like even like a Darth Vader, you know, like somebody who obviously has the sympathy of the crowd, but like can't imagine sort of like whatever, like leaving the stranglehold that their master has on him. I thought Otis was seriously like way far gone from ever achieving this sort of reaction ever again, you know, from drawing this level of sympathy from the crowd again after just years of just kind of being meat eating like nothing, right? But they did it. You know, Otis is, at least on this show, one of the most over baby faces. And maybe if we're just kind of gauging like reactions of the week, I bet you this is going to be one of the biggest reactions of the entire week in this promotion. So they've done such a great job of building and building and building this tension. And it's certainly by far the hottest thing Alpha Academy has ever been a part of. It just kind of speaks to how well done I think all of this has been.
I think it's the story on Raw. I won't say the entire company, but I'll say on Raw, I think this is the story that people are getting most into. They certainly were by a rate.
What's on SmackDown? I guess Cody.
I thought the Cody AJ thing was excellent on Friday. Like that was just a terrific angle, and it's one that is.
And what else on SmackDown?
Well, I'm just stating like that. That is one. Like this has been really strong stuff, and it's going week to week, and you're teasing this, and. Mm-hmm. You know it's got a direction to it, and the byproduct is you're getting these Zayn Gable matches that have been incredible on top of it, and you're going to have an electric crowd in Scotland for another one of these matches, but people are just as interested in the follow-up with Otis and what this is going to lead to and where this ultimately where the payoff is.
It's a good storyline for television, you know, like in ring. Is there a big payoff with an Otis match in the future? Like with the right match and the right storyline, yes. But like when we're talking about just like filling the week to week television time with these sort of like non-wrestling segments, I mean, this is a good example of one.
Pierce is in his office and Bron Breakker comes in stating he would break Sami Zayn in half, but he thanks Pierce for the match tonight. And Pierce explains the only reason I'm giving you a match is because Ricochet requested it. And Braun's going to show up Pierce tonight because I'm still pissed about the King of the Ring that you didn't put me in. And Pierce is like, get over it. We'll put you in one of our other six tournaments that we have before the end of the year.
Like, what does this guy want? A title shot? All he has to do is, you know, ask the champion. That seems to be that easy.
He could go about this a lot. There's an easier path than he's making.
He could fake a retirement and attack the champion. He could do that too.
Chad is backstage and goes up to Alpha Academy and calls Maxine a genius for faking that injury. And Maxine just goes, I'm really hurt. Staying in character. And Gable was great here. And Tozawa says he's hurt too. And then he looks at Otis and he's so proud of Otis, my number one guy, and said, we're going to accomplish our goal at Clash at the Castle of winning my Intercontinental title. And he goes off thinking this was all the plan.
Mm-hmm.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Ricochet against Bron Breakker. So literally on his ass, it reads badass on Bron Breakker. And then on the front, it reads dog. Not dog-faced, not dog-faced gremlin, just dog. Dog.
He's the badass dog.
Badass. These words are not in, they are not paired with each other. These are like separate wording on his singlet.
He's the badass, and he's also
a dog.
A dog. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Got to get them in there. Yeah.
Ricochet gets up and just slaps him, and he's selling the ribs heavily, but he's using his speed, which is quite something to try and use that over Bron Breakker, but both men are incredibly quick. Breaker ducks and lands a big clothesline. Military presses Ricochet on top of the barricade, dropping him on the ribs as they go to break. Come back, and Ricochet does a DDT counter, hits a cabrata using the bad ribs, goes to the top, goes for a splash off the top, but rolls through, lands a super kick and a recoil, but Braun kicks out, and then with Ricochet seated on the top, Braun just leaps to the top and does a no-hands Frankensteiner, followed by a spear for the win in 8 minutes. This finishing sequence was just incredible.
Awesome. Like, Breaker is, I think, making a spectacle out of these short TV matches. In every match, he does something that really just kind of makes you, remember it, first of all, and just be really impressed, whether it's be like the velocity of a spear or doing something like this no-hands Frankensteiner, which is nuts. Felt like a good sort of cat and mouse game if the cat was also like really, really fast and really powerful. So they're doing such a great job with Braun Breaker, and I think Ricochet is really benefiting from all this as well.
Dog and mouse game, maybe.
A dog and mouse, yes, thank you.
So Breaker lifts up the steps, and he's going to attack them. I think Pat McAfee called these chairs, and Cole corrected him and said those are steps.
You could sit on steps, I guess, but yeah, they're not really chairs.
So he goes to launch them, but the officials are out, and then Ilya appears and saves Ricochet and prevents Braun from using the stairs / chairs. And we're going to get Ilya Dragunov against Braun Breaker on Raw next week.
Yeah, I mean, this is really just an NXT match, isn't it? But like, when they've done such a great job of like presenting both guys in these 2 months, that it feels like an anticipated match for anybody just watching the main roster. Only if you've seen their main roster runs, this already feels like an anticipated one. These are like the two biggest prospects to come out of NXT over that draft, at least on Raw.
Dragon Lee is with Rey and Zelina, and Dragon Lee is reflecting on his loss, and Rey blames Carlito for him losing, and Lee, you're going to get your payback, and Rey is going for the head in Damian Priest tonight, and they all agree. Great idea. Then Pat McAfee used his Telestrator for a breakdown of Liv feeling up Dom in the opening segment, and he did a full breakdown of this.
Yeah. I didn't even know about the controversy ahead of time, but is this a...
This was a tie-in. This was just like a creepy moment for Pat to break down.
Gotcha. Okay.
Natalya against Kiana James. They explained that Kiana James was a business student and was going to be an entrepreneur, but then joined WWE.
Yeah, that could happen.
It's like she was going to be a surgeon, but then she joined WWE. I was like, well, then she didn't really become a surgeon, did she? It's like, I was going to be rich in business, but then I came here instead. So it's like, I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was like, you might have wanted to. It's not a guarantee you would have been successful doing such a thing.
But she went to like 4 years of expensive schooling for it.
Is that a small, insignificant number in the country that can claim the same thing?
I mean, it's more than you and I could say, I guess.
Well, that is true, but... I'm not extolling my virtues either in the business world, but Kiana's here.
Listen, man, when you go through 2.0, you need anything from your past to turn into a gimmick, and I guess that's what they needed. Now, what I find kind of perplexing about all of this stuff with Kiana James, I just talked about the two biggest prospects that they presented really well from NXT to the main roster, and Braun Breaker and Ilya Dragunov. Like, Kiana James, they give her this assistant to Adam Pearce role, and they've done nothing with it. You know, she's been seen in the background she's seen like taking Adam Pearce away to speak to him in the back, but nothing ever results from it in terms of storyline. And now we're just kind of getting her on screen debut. So I don't really understand that sort of rollout.
Well, I don't think the Adam Pearce thing is done. She was interviewed by Jackie Redman, and if you remember, she keeps referring to him as Adam, he's fabulous. And she asked Adam for this match, and this is her perfect first step on her rise to the top. So they're certainly...
So doing some sort of like, I guess, man, I'm trying to watch my words here.
We had someone like in the feedback a few weeks ago suggest this, and I had not, I didn't get any sense of that, but it's kind of hard not to see like them teasing something here where Kiana is whatever it is, like, having some relationship with Adam Pearce, or at least is inferring that.
Okay. Well, that would be, I would say a bit risky to do her perception.
Probably wouldn't be a storyline I would be doing right now in WWE.
Let's see how it unfolds.
Natalya goes for an armbar. It's blocked, and then she's complaining. Kiana is complaining about the arm, but it's just to lure Natalya into the corner. She survives a discus lariat and release German, and then James kicks her off on the sharpshooter attempt and hits the 401k and wins in 2 minutes and 56 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Crowd was pretty quiet in this one, and I mean, probably due to the fact that Kiana James is still a relative unknown on Raw, and Natalya is just not really somebody who's been of, relevance, at least in terms of, like, character or storyline for quite a while, and that might change coming off of this, but I quite enjoyed the match. I mean, I thought Natalya got to really shine here and showing off a lot of, like, really flashy sort of like Owen inspired movement off the top. James was right there with her, I felt, so I thought it was
Kiana got a lot
match.
Better in NXT. If you were watching her right at the beginning, like, she made a lot of strides in NXT, and I think there's also there's a lot of stuff they could do with her just character wise I think you just have a pretty bland introduction so far for her. I mean, she could really take credit for, look at the TKO stock since the draft. It's just shot up through Kiana's drafting to Raw. She could take credit for that.
I'm sure she should be the one showing off charts and graphs and things like that.
It's an unexplored territory for a performer. Mm. Jade and Bianca are walking backstage, and we see Chad Gable in conversation with the Creeds. And Belair and Cargill come out, and they state that they're going to defend their titles on either show, and they call out Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark, who state that they've been ducking them on Raw, and Baszler says that you should be scared of us, and we're going to send you back to SmackDown. So Jade wants the match right now, and Adam Pearce comes out and makes the match, and it is Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill against Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark for the women's tag titles, and it seems like Belair's knee injury is completely healed.
Well, it's been like
it's been a week.
A week, you know. So, yeah,
that's all you need. Just have to, you know, recuperate. She needs to give her advice to Ricochet.
Because
these ribs have been a problem for him, but he's also getting speared every week, so that's probably not helping.
Not every injury is the same, but maybe she just has better rehab than Ricochet does.
Belair and Cargill did stereo vertical suplexes and then kip ups and pose going to break. Belair is hitting punches in the corner. And then does a backflip as Stark runs into her partner. And it's at this point, if you're paying attention, this whole match is being shot from ringside. And it's like one continuous shot. And I thought this was awesome. This was so different. And I just thought it was so interesting to watch this match from a totally different angle than you're used to. The whole thing, like, this last half of the match is all from this one perspective. And then you get the run-in that I even thought the run-in was kind of cool. Like, it was so much more abrupt right after the KOD was hit onto Stark and Isla Dawn Elba Fire run in for the DQ at 9 minutes and 9 seconds. I'm more curious your thoughts on just the production of this match, because that to me was more interesting than the actual match itself.
Yeah, I would tend to agree about that fact. But yeah, they've been doing these sort of like ringside, you know, steady cam shots coming back from commercial for like quite a while now. I think for as long as we've known that Lee Fitting has taken over. But this was the longest that I think they've held on this shot.
Including the finish.
Yeah. And I thought it made for a really interesting, neat effect. You know, it felt like you were a ringside manager or like a ringside cameraman, just kind of like hovering around and getting to witness professional wrestling action from that level that it has never really been presented like that before. Now, I think it made for a really cool effect. It's the type of thing where they really have to, I think, be careful about not abusing and using too much. I wonder if, like, even once a show is too much for something like this.
It is going to be jarring for some too. That, I mean, it's like, I think the best kind of production changes are ones that are, they're not necessarily hitting you over the head. But I like experimenting. I thought this was really cool. I thought it was it was one match, and it was just a different point of view to have. And I just thought, like, even the run in, I'm like, this felt less groan inducing than a typical run-in, just because it was different and it felt less expected.
I mean, I've been a fan of their experimentation of trying, you know, different things. Now, I think things are the best when you can do like camera trickery for the sake of like benefiting an actual storyline. And I think they managed to do that using the Steadicam with like, you know, the way that they've been able to seg segments, you know, between each other. This was just kind of more like doing it because it was neat and cool. But maybe eventually they will come up with an interesting reason for within story to do something like this. But yeah, it was unfortunately the most interesting part of this match because I think, you know, Bella and Jade certainly add a level of star power to any sort of appearance that they have. And that's more than I can say for like I'm more interested in Bella and Jade's tag team title run than I am either of the men's champions right now. But the challengers are really not there for them. And Shayna and Zoe are a part of that group. Fire and Dawn, when they came in for the run-in, crowd really just, I mean, obviously they were disappointed because of the DQ, but I never got the sense they were that excited.
I doubt they knew who
either.
They were.
Like, yeah,
I don't
yeah,
think
honestly.
They're that identifiable to the average viewer.
Mm. There was some stuff we skipped in the middle here, John, after the Kiana James Natalia match with New Day in the back with Kathy Kelly. So they're being interviewed.
Oh, right. Yeah, there was a segment where Redman is with the. I really skipped over, didn't I? By several things here.
It's okay. I just wanted to finish the match.
Let's go backwards here. So Redman is with New Day, and Karrion Kross is, he walks in, and he's been trying to break them up, and the New Day explained that no one has ever come between them, and Kross walks in and says, your chant just doesn't hit the same anymore because the power of positivity is dead. And Kingston says, well, we still hit hard, and AOP is going to find that out. So Kross just whispers to Woods that after tonight, you're not going to have to follow him around anymore. So he's planting these seeds into Xavier Woods that would continue to continue in the match later with AOP. Mm-hmm. Natalya is with Sonya Deville, picking up on their talk later. And Natalya, quoting Owen Hart, enough is enough. It's time for a change.
Yeah. Which
maybe she's going to get that black and yellow t-shirt design, which was it was a brutal t-shirt with
yeah, it was
clock
pretty...
and yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe she'll come out dressed in like the caution tape inspired gear.
Could.
Should be interesting.
But then Sonya just blows her off here. She's like, sorry, just wait a minute. She sees Stark and Baszler, and they still don't care what Deville has to say. And Deville is trying to give them tips against Jade and Bianca. So that's the story there. And you almost get the sense like this is almost like these four kind of shooters getting together, and that's going to be the whole backdrop. Like, people forget about like the MMA background with Sonya Deville, but there is like this common thread with these four that you're starting to see fleshed out.
This seems to be that at least that sort of tease, and I'm really interested in that idea. Now, like, out of that crop, do I see like any of them becoming like a champion level? Like Shayna, maybe, you know, like we know, like I think Paul Levesque probably still sees a really high ceiling for Shayna Baszler, just given the way that she was booked back in NXT, and she certainly hasn't reached that yet in the WWE. Could this potential stable be her route towards that? I'd be interested at least to see like the WWE's take in a female shooter stable. You know, that sounds interesting.
Braun Strowman against Carlito. This one was really quick, where Carlito tried the backstabber. It had no impact, and Braun hit him with like this reverse choke slam and wins in a minute 26. And Balor and JD get involved. He's beating them down. Dominic chop blocks Braun's knee and then gets a chair. Dominic gets the chair, and it's swatted away. And he's going after Dom on the floor when Liv runs out to stand in front of Dominic as a shield. And this allows Balor and JD to attack Braun. And JD lights this dude up with like 5,000 chair shots to the back, to the knee. I mean, he just held nothing back with these chair shots to Braun. And and then it ends with Dominic and Liv face to face and Balor getting in between them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I learned from all of these interactions on the show is that the LWO are just awful friends. You know, Braun Strowman earlier with the Dragon Lee attack came out, helped them, chased Judgment Day away. Where are they to return the favor? For that matter, like, where were they to save Dragon Lee before Braun Strowman came in to help? You know,
well, Rey Mysterio is getting ready to take off the head of the Judgment Day.
Sure, okay.
He's preparing. That's when we had the Belair Cargill match with Baszler and Stark. Afterwards, it's a beatdown with Stark, Baszler, Isla Dawn, and Elba Fire beating down the champions. We go to the back, and Jackie Redmond is with Damian Priest and states that Rey has been a thorn in their side. He's going to finish things tonight. And when he is asked about Liv Morgan, before he can answer, Drew McIntyre enters, telling Priest to enjoy this. This is the highest point you're ever going to reach, and you made it personal, and I'm going to see you soon. So the countdown to Clash at the Castle continues. Jey Uso made his way through the crowd and cut a promo in the audience going over the last year with last year's Money in the Bank featuring the Bloodline Civil War and that he was not going to be the right-hand man anymore and he was able to go out on his own and you people allowed me to become main event Jey Uso. So his plan this summer is to climb that ladder and win Money in the Bank and thanks the fans for yeeting with him.
Gave his glasses to a kid standing next to him wearing his shirt. So I really like this. I mean, visually, I think they've really nailed the Jey Uso entrance by this point with the fireflies and just how special it like having him come out, following him with the from the background as he walks into that arena full of like these lights. It really feels very, very special. The promo itself, I sense was maybe a little bit messy. Like, I don't know if in the middle there was like a bit of an awkward
pause. He definitely
got
thrown off by someone. Like, whether it was something being yelled at him. I mean, it is kind of tough to be doing a promo that you don't take into effect, like how close you are to these people that are probably screaming as well, sure. Or just throwing you off track. There was kind of a hiccup in there.
Yeah. And the end, they kind of cut off prematurely. It seemed like he still had something to say, and then they just kind of hit his music. So a little bit messy, but like, it's fine. The message was there. It felt heartfelt. Like, he just came out here to thank people, which is kind of, you're welcome, Jey Uso, you know, for I was happy to yeet with you. But of course, this was also him declaring his entry into the Money in the Bank.
Which I'm glad they're getting some of these names out now because it's not a long, it's a 3-week turnaround again after Clash at the Castle. So you might as well get some of these names out there now. You almost, if you're going to be doing this quick of a turnaround, you kind of have to be promoting two shows at once like they did with Backlash and already having people declare for the King and Queen of the Ring. Jackie is with Lyra Valkyria and... This is not like planting a seed one day for a heel turn. You're the closest to Becky Lynch. How's she doing? And she says, well, she's disappointed, but she'll be back. And she's a real champion, something Liv knows nothing about. And then Jackie's follow-up is, well, without Becky here, how do you feel you're going to succeed on Raw without her? And Liv is like, Lyra, I'm helping to contribute to this heel turn, says, I can stand on my own 2 feet, and I'm looking ahead to Money in the Bank. And as soon as she says this, Io Sky, whose new character is she's nuts, just attacks Lyra Valkyria and throws her all over the backstage area and leaves her laying because she lost to Lyra in the semifinals of the Queen of the Ring. So would be a... educated guess that these two will end up in the Money in the Bank.
Sure, yeah. Again, and I guess this time you would think maybe Io would beat Lyra, or maybe they both qualify, and yeah, that, I guess
I'm thinking both get in.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to even have the depth to do qualifying matches and such. Like, they might. They have a month to build this up.
I mean, how many people are Money in the Bank these days? Eight?
Yeah.
Six or eight? It's eight, right?
It's usually around eight.
Okay, well, I mean, they need a TV show to with some matches to fill, so I could see, you know, eight qualified matches across the two shows. I love this Io Sky. Like, I mean, to me, one of the coolest parts about her is her entrance, where she just comes out to that amazing song and just she stumbles, right? And she's taken that same stumbling energy. And now she's putting it into her backstage attacks, like this sort of like wild, erratic, just kind of unpredictable, you know, energy. And she's just unleashing. Last week it came about, you know, when she got really upset that Kyrie lost. And now she's taking it out on her opponents. Like, I like these little brief appearances from Io perfectly fine.
This is what the Tongan should be on SmackDown.
Totally. Yes, absolutely.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. New Day against AOP. Michael Cole, just stirring the pot here, noting that, well, Xavier Woods has never won a singles title here in WWE. Kofi's accomplished a lot more than him. And Pat McAfee's response is, hey, I was a punter on a football team. Some of us are just along for the ride.
Wow.
So this is where we were informed that Akam is known as the Punjabi powerhouse, and Rezar is the Albanian psychopath.
Right. Those are their nicknames. Yes.
Yes. Did they come up with their own nicknames? Like, how does Michael Cole know this? Like, these sound like, hey, these are our nicknames. Please refer to us as such. I am the Punjabi powerhouse, and my colleague here is the Albanian psychopath.
I'm guessing they were written down for Michael Cole by marketing and given to him on a piece of paper. Yeah.
The advantage is on Xavier when Scarlett gets onto the apron, distracting the referee, and Kofi is dealing with Karrion Kross on the floor. So Woods turns around, and there is no one there to tag. And he's left to be hit with what a rush in 2.5 minutes. And Xavier Woods, the seeds of doubt have been planted, and he gives Kofi this look afterwards as Kofi's checking on him. What the hell?
Yeah. I like the story, or at least the beginnings of the story, because it finally might introduce some tension between the members of the New Day. But I thought this match, the way they got to the finish here, was pretty lame. Yes, it was just a quick match to create some dissent between the members, which is perfectly fine. But the way they got there was like, it was like the least creative way they could have gotten a distraction finish. Like, what was Kofi even distracted by? You know, he just decided to jump off the apron to just like taunt, you know, Cross, and it just felt like a mistake that like Kofi would never make. So maybe that's what they want you to think. Is Kofi actually doing this on purpose? I don't know.
Jackie catches up with Elba Fire and Isla Dawn, and their grudge with Baszler and Zoe Stark is that they got a title shot and they've never beaten us. It's like, has any team beaten you? Like, how many matches have you two had on Raw total?
Zero.
Like,
have they had any?
I don't know. Like, that would be your issue with almost every team in this company. And then Isla Dawn mentions that Elba Fire not being booked at Clash at the Castle in Glasgow. That's a big error. And that is probably most people's learning that Elba Fire is from Scotland. So I guess that solidifies her spot on the show. And I guess we're getting a three-way maybe for this. For the tag titles?
Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe you're just getting... Maybe they're not going to qualify. I mean, who says they actually have to, you know, get on? Like...
We'll find out.
They might be on the kickoff, I guess, if you're going to give, like, you know what Indy Hartwell had. If you're going to give that spot to anybody, I guess you could give it to these two. I mean, this is a step in the right direction. They actually cut a promo here. And I actually thought
the bar is exceptionally low.
Well, you start off being a background character, okay, and then you advance to actually maybe a run in, and then you got a promo. I mean, to them, this was like WrestleMania, this edition of Raw. But I thought like Isla Dawn actually sounded pretty good here. You know, good charisma. So maybe they'll get more. We'll see you next week.
Well, next week is in Toledo, Ohio, with Io Sky against Lyra Valkyria, Sami Zayn versus Otis, and Bron Breakker against Ilya Dragunov. Mm-hmm. Main event is Damian Priest and Rey Mysterio. Rey hit an acai moonsault early on and then gets hit with an elevated flatliner. Priest dumps him to the floor and he's warning Rey, don't get back in. I don't want to do it like this. But Rey drags himself in and Rey gets stopped on the buckle, and Priest tries for a razor's edge. It's blocked, and Rey goes to twist it into a hurricanrana off the turnbuckle, but he does not like come down on his shoulders. Instead, he basically like turns and like sits on Priest's head and rotates over.
I found this like pretty interesting, because I wonder if the original spot was Rey countering the razor's edge with a Rana, it looked like there was like a sort of an awkward pause where like they maybe bailed on the move because they didn't feel like their balance was right. And so Ray had to improvise. This is all me thinking that this is maybe what happened. And if that's the case, I think Ray's improvisation actually like should really be commended, you know, because the if the original spot was him Rana-ing out of a razor's edge, for him to have to jump and spin in midair to do a Rana the way he did over Priest, kind of felt like even cooler.
Well, he dropped Priest, hit the 619, and drops the dime for a two count. Carlito shows up. I think this was like four matches in a row that we were getting runs for. So it was like
Carlito specifically.
It feels agonizing at this point. Yeah, dude, Carlito is just, I don't know.
There's, I mean, it's the story.
There's no spark to this character. He comes out, but then Dragon Lee yanks him off the apron and attacks. JD and Balor then attack Dragon Lee. Ray hits a tornillo to the floor and then hops to the top right into a South of Heaven off the top turnbuckle for Damian to win in 13 and a half minutes. As Priest is celebrating, Drew McIntyre jumps him, hits a Future Shock DDT, stares at the title, and as he sets up for the Claymore, the Judgment Day return, and he lays them out. Drew is on the floor and starts yelling at Michael Cole, turns around, and is chokeslammed through the desk by Damian Priest. So the Judgment Day stand tall on a night where they were featured a lot.
They really were, yeah. I'm not really that mad at it. Like, as long as, like, you know, the segments are compelling, they're trying to tell a show-long story, I guess, of what are they trying to tell? Well, first of all, the Liv Morgan thing. She's involved with the whole group. They also have Braun Strowman, who's trying to, you know, get at them. The LWO are also trying to, you know, I guess, build something up with them. And then, of course, you have Damian Priest to close off the show. So, like, they've got, like, four different programs going on with, like, you know, various entities outside of the show.
For all we want to talk about on SmackDown and kind of just, like, some of the uninspiring stuff happening on SmackDown, that's a show that, aside from the big one with Roman Reigns, they are essentially at close to full strength. And this show that I think routinely is the more enjoyable show, and it's the three-hour show, and we're talking no Seth Rollins, no Rhea Ripley, no CM Punk, no Becky Lynch, and tonight no Gunther, which is not insignificant. And even like a Jey Uso was like, it was a pretty, like, very self-contained segment. It's not like he was all over this show either. Like, they are working with a lot less at their disposal just from star power, which typically these WWE audiences, it's going to be star power that resonates the most. And this was a show that, like, I can't imagine too many Raws this year that are going to be down by this many people all at once, just throwing in a Gunther there for as well, for whatever reason he was off this week.
It's true. But I enjoyed the show way more than I did SmackDown. You know, outside of the AJ Styles segment at the end. You know, like, SmackDown to me, just at least this week, just kind of felt like it was, like, both shows are kind of in rebuilding phases where you're trying to, you know, get that next generation up to a higher level. But I think Raw's just doing such a better job of it. You're already seeing kind of the fruits of their labor here with somebody like Liv Morgan, who tonight took a huge step up. Just, you know, not just having the championship at this point, but like having a new character. What she's got going on with Dominic is very interesting. And I would suggest maybe probably the A program right now, honestly. Maybe ahead
that,
of
that, that story's going very well. The Zane Gable story is going very well.
With Otis.
Bron Breakker, they're handling
developing
him
really well. Dragunov, Ricochet, I would kind of lump in there as well. The reintroduction of Sheamus, I think, has gone really well as well. Like, I think up and Ludwig Kaiser stepping up with him. Like, I think they're doing a great job actually on Raw of pushing all of these new names.
And it tells you as well, like, yes, he was a part of the show closing angle. It wasn't insignificant, but it's not like they relied heavily on Drew McIntyre tonight, like, to do a big promo segment or anything like that. Like, he was on screen for 5 minutes tops.
He was just there to remind you that he's in the main event coming up in 3 weeks. That's all.
2 weeks at this point. Very close to the show. Yeah. So that was Raw from Monday night. And, that will take us on to your feedback at forum.postwrestling.com. If you want to send in a super chat, we will take your questions, thoughts, feedback. The floor is yours.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com. And shall I start, John?
Yes.
Let's start with Matthew from England, who says, a solid edition of Raw tonight. All of the main event angles and stories are very logical. The television is compelling and they're building more stars. Braun Breaker continues to impress. Judgment Day once again prove why they are the main event act on Raw, and Liv Morgan feels like an absolute star. My one criticism on the show is what most of us say every week, and that is the show is just too long. 3 hours is a big commitment, and I'm not sure how the final hour will hold up with the New Day versus Final Testament. Couple of questions. One, it seems like a foregone conclusion that CM Punk is costing Drew and McIntyre at Clash. So with that said, do we think Gunther wins at SummerSlam? I don't think it's a foregone conclusion.
I don't either. No.
I could see Drew actually winning at Clash.
Yeah, I could see that as a possibility as well. You could easily do the story. The idea I like the most is CM Punk is on commentary. And it's the playoff of WrestleMania. Can Drew keep his focus on the champion, or is he going to be derailed by CM Punk, which is what cost him at WrestleMania? And mm-hmm. it gets CM Punk on the show, and it's something, it's another added element for that main event. But yeah, you could put the title on Drew, and he gets past the mind games of a CM Punk, and he gets the title, and that Drew Punk match is that much bigger because that is going to feel like the top program on Raw, and I'm more a fan of the top program should be for the title. But I mean, you can go the easy route too, and just like, I don't like this idea of the title going from Priest to Drew to Gunther all in the span of, you know, six, seven weeks. I guess that's too much.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are a lot of like ways you can kind of play around with it. But if I had to pick a scenario, I mean, Gunther versus Priest, perhaps more likely, especially if we're talking about like what feels very much, if not a full on babyface, honestly, at this point, then at least a tweener type of Damian Priest who is facing heels like a Drew McIntyre. If he goes on to face Gunther, then yes, I think that's a very interesting, perhaps likely scenario. As a newer member of the site, I've really enjoyed the shows, and I think all of you do a stellar job. Brandon, Tim, and the post crew have really done some excellent work in covering the General Grant suit. Can you do a small explanation of what Poison Rana is, newbie here, and how long have you and Wei been doing this? Yeah, well, welcome, first of all. Poison Rana is, I guess we can say like a brother feed. Sister feed, you know, to the Post Wrestling. They're a part of the Post Wrestling Network. They're, of course, our friends Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, who do our Up Next reviews every single Tuesday here, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 10:15, I should say, on youtube.com/postwrestling, and then on the free feed every single Wednesday morning, I should say. But yeah, well, like we're friends with them. Like we've known them for a long time, and they kind of host their own feed of their own shows with a lot of our other friends. So, shout out to those guys. Please subscribe to them. It's completely free, but they also have a Patreon where they do just as many shows as we do. So if you're in any sort of shortage of content, poisonrana.ca. And we're also, of course, going to be hosting the Cash In live show with them as well. A lot of just excellent, really good content, not even just professional wrestling related, but just like fun chat between like, you know, people if you happen to maybe like personalities like ours. And John and I have been doing these sort of podcasts long before Post Wrestling. We started off as part of the Fight Network and Live Audio Wrestling. And I would say, as far as podcasting goes, when did we start podcasting? Like 2009? Something like that?
Sounds about right.
15 years. A long time. That's a teenager. Yeah.
Muggin. Liv Morgan was the straw that stirred the Judgment Day's drink. Dom's continued resistance against her is slowly starting to wane. Logical, well-worked matches throughout the night. Braun Breaker continues to be a rabid dog. Chad Gable continues to be abusive. That little chat with the Creeds is another sign. Damian Priest has his hands full with Drew. Judgment Day's disarray and Elba Isla are finding a way to Scotland. Solid outing.
Thank you, Muggin, as always.
The trailer voiceover himself, Muggin. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your feedback. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. It's a really big week here at Post Wrestling. So if you want to check out the interview with Evan Husney is dropping on Tuesday on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel and our other feeds as well. Tuesday night, it's Up Next with Braden and Davey, and you can hear what all the buzz is about Poison Rana at 10:15 Eastern after NXT. Wednesday, a lot of stuff coming at you. Pollock and Thurston at 3 Eastern, and then it's Rewind to Dynamite, immediately followed by the return of the Double Shot. We will finish our Dynamite review, jump onto the cafe about 11 or so Eastern time, and then do our thoughts on episode 1 of Who Killed WCW. So head on over postwrestlingcafe.com and you can take part in all of the programming in bold in front of your eyes. The Double Shot, Rewind Away, MCU Later, and Rewind to SmackDown, plus a Dominion review this week and Collision Course. Literally, you get your value this week alone with all the cool stuff coming your way on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Something, well, I guess, how many shows we got on the cafe feed this week? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's more than there are weekdays, okay? You need an extra day to fit all of this listening in.
Well, you can make your calendar and just build it around our schedule. That's what I do every week. So head on over to postwrestling.com to check out everything. And that is it for us. Good night.